Last week, we discovered several of the traits in a woman who is not identified by name, but is called notable or great, depending on your translation. And just to review those first seven qualities that we looked at last week, first of all, she was thoughtful. Second, she was kind, exemplifying the golden rule before Jesus ever uttered it. She was third, hospitable. And fourth, prepared for the occasion when she could be hospitable. Fifth, she was unselfish. And sixth, a person of spiritual discernment. She recognized that Elisha was a man of God. And seventh, she was a self-starter. No one had to tell her what to do or make a suggestion for her. She was able to not only think of such things, but implement them on her own without having to be asked. Now, when we ended last week, we see that as a reward, and this is not the reason that she did any of these things, this was just her character. As a reward, Elisha promised her a son. And she did have a son. And so as that comes to a close, and she suddenly was able to conceive a son and bear a child, everyone was happy. But it didn't stay that way. The qualities possessed by the Shunammite woman do not end where we left off last week. We have five more that we want to look at tonight. As we saw in the scripture reading in verses 18 through 21, the son inexplicably died. And she, we don't know his age. I don't believe it is mentioned. Certainly he is probably at least five. He may be 4 or 5 years older than that. We just simply don't know. But she took him and laid him on Elisha's bed, which you'll remember was upstairs. It was a room that she had urged her husband to add to the house for the prophet. And this brings us to her next quality, the first one for this evening, which is that of being decisive. She already knew what she was going to do. She did not sit down and discuss this with herself for hours and hours. She decided immediately that there was only one course of action. And she prepared for that by putting her son on Elisha's bed. Then she struck out to find the prophet. Now, it can't be understated that she was devastated by this loss. But having received a son whom she did not ask for, but having received one, she could not now bear to lose him. Now we want to pick up with where we left off to notice the second quality for this evening, and that is that she is, for lack of a better word, tactical. She knows how she is going to approach this situation. So let's pick up with verse 22 and see what she did. Then she called to her husband, "Please send one of the young men and one of the donkeys that I may run to the man of God and come back." So he said, why are you going to him today? It is neither the new moon nor the Sabbath. And she said, "It is well." Then she saddled a donkey and said to her servant, "Drive and go forward. Do not slacken the pace for me unless I tell you." So she departed and went to the man of God at Mount Carmel. She used tactics that she had already decided upon to use with anything that got in the way of the mission she was on. She told her husband what she was going to do, but not why. And remember that two things: that her husband generally seems disposed to doing whatever she suggests. He had built the room. He had allowed her to feed the prophet and so on. And so he generally seems to be compliant. But she is in a hurry and does not want to take the time to discuss the matter of what has happened. Remember that the husband, so far as we know, only knew that the son was sick. He does not, at least there's nothing in the text that indicates that he knows that the child is dead. So if she told him that, he would want to come and check out the situation. She wants to avoid that conversation and all the time that it would take, because she believes that time is important in this case. And she has already made up her mind what the only solution is. Remember, she's been decisive. And so her tactics are not to discuss it, but to press forward to get accomplished what she had decided to do. But her husband is perplexed. Why are you going to see the prophet? It's not the new moon or the Sabbath. Every time I read this text, I always crack up, because this is so humorous and so typical of the way many people think. It's almost as if her husband is saying, don't you know that there are times to be religious and this isn't one of those? Why would you go see the prophet? It's not the new moon. It's not the Sabbath day. Why would anybody be religious on some other day besides when they have to be? I think a lot of people think that way today, don't you? And so it's easy to understand why he might say that. How many people think they only need to be religious on the Lord's Day, and the rest of the week is theirs? They don't particularly see Christianity as a way of life in order to serve God. It's simply a time when you have to have certain times where you're very devout and pious. She avoids a discussion on that subject. Again, she is operating tactically in her choice what to discuss and what not to discuss. The only thing that she answers is, in the Hebrew, one word, translated peace. In the text, the Hebrew word is the word shalom, meaning peace, health, and other things that would fit in to that genre. Now, the King James and the American Standard and the New American Standard all give what they think is the meaning: it shall be well. And that could very well be what she is saying. Those are not, however, her exact words, and that's the reason they're in italics. They have added "it shall be," and "well" translates shalom. When the Septuagint translated this into the Greek, they likewise chose one word as an answer, and that's the Greek word Irene, which we would probably call Irene in our language, and that also carries the meaning of peace. It's the word that Jesus used and the apostles used when they begin some of their letters: peace be to you. That's the same equivalent of the Hebrew shalom. So why can she say it is well? How can she say that? Because she is confident that Elisha will do something to help, and because she knows that she is not going to take no for an answer. Now, the description with the donkey, I don't know if there's nothing said about her riding, but she had the servant take the donkey. So presumably, maybe she's riding in a cart behind. Otherwise, is the servant riding one and she's walking? I don't know. You wouldn't think so. But he was told, the servant was told to drive hard in order to get there quickly. And Elisha turned out to be at Mount Carmel, the place where his predecessor, Elijah, had experienced his greatest success. You remember from 1 Kings chapter 18, the contest that Elijah had with the 450 false prophets of Baal, and how they called upon Baal to consume their sacrifice and nothing happened. They started in the morning. At noon, Elijah encouraged them a little bit. Maybe he's not listening right now. Maybe he's on a trip. Call a little louder. And so they did, and they cut themselves so that blood gushed out until the evening, but Baal did not consume their sacrifice. Then, as you recall, Elijah had his sacrifice prepared and dumped water over it three times. Nevertheless, when he prayed to God, fire came and consumed that sacrifice. And it was at that point that even Ahab was impressed. Maybe the only time in his life, but even he was impressed with the power of God. So Elisha, we don't know why, was at that particular place. The place what was quite notable in previous history. So we don't know why he was there, but that's where she found him. Now we want to come to the third principle concerning this notable woman tonight, and that is that of tenacity. Let's go ahead and read the rest of verse 25 through verse 27. So it was, when the man of God saw her afar off, that he said to his servant Gehazi, "Look, a Shunammite woman, the Shunammite woman. Please run now to meet her and say to her, 'Is it well with you? Is it well with your husband? Is it well with the child?'" And she answered, when he went and asked her, "It is well." Now when she came to the man of God at the hill, she caught him by the feet. But Gehazi came near to push her away. But the man of God said, "Let her alone, for her soul is in deep distress. But the Lord has hidden it from me and has not told me." So Elisha saw her approach, recognized her, and confides to Gehazi that it's the Shunammite woman, and instructs him to go ask if it is well with her family. What this is in the Hebrew is shalom with you, shalom with your husband, shalom with the child. And she answers, "Shalom." So all of these are further instances of that word being translated as peace, or is it well with you? And again, she knows that it will be well because she knows Elisha has the power of God. So she answers, "Shalom." But she continued, she basically brushed Gehazi aside and continued until she got to the prophet. She would not settle for a conversation with an assistant, with his messenger. And she took hold of his feet. Gehazi wanted to push her away, but Elisha knew something horrible had happened. He didn't know what, since God hadn't told him. But he finally found out when she says what she says in the next verse. So let's notice that verse, 28. So she said, "Did I ask a son of my Lord? Did I not say, 'Do not deceive me'?" Now, if you have forgotten or were not here last Sunday evening, that was her response when Elisha said that as a reward for all of her kindness and so forth, that she would bear a son. Her initial response was, "Don't deceive me." She was not exactly young. Her husband was old. And she had, and they had, wanted a son for years, maybe even decades, but had not been able to have one. And it was just almost too good to be true. Don't lie to me. Don't tell me I'm going to have a son when we're in the condition that we're in. But he did not deceive her. However, now that the son has died, she would count it as being deceived that she had a son, but only for a short time, and then he died. Her hopes had been raised high, but now they have been dashed. This was not a reward to her way of thinking. She undoubtedly was counting on her son to take care of her in her latter years, and to have children to carry on the family name, grandchildren. For him to die at so young an age seemed to her a very cruel thing, and not the promise that she had envisioned at all when Elisha first informed her that she would bear a son. So she is quite distraught. He knows that. He knows just from what she says that the son had died without her having to give any particulars. And he thought that he had a solution to the problem. Let's read verses 29 through 31. Then he said to Gehazi, "Go and get yourself ready and take my staff in your hand and be on your way. If you meet anyone, do not greet him. And if anyone greets you, do not answer him. But lay my staff on the face of the child." And the mother of the child said, now that sounds like action, and that sounds like it would be sufficient, doesn't it? But the mother said, "As the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, I will not leave you." So he arose and followed after her. Now Gehazi went on ahead of them and laid the staff on the face of the child, but there was neither voice nor hearing. Therefore he went back to meet him and told him, saying, "The child has not awakened." Here we see that the Shunammite woman is fiercely tenacious. She was not only decisive, she was not going to budge from this plan. A messenger would not do. The man of God had to come. Elisha had to come to tend to a matter so severe as this one was. She will not settle for an assistant. She says, "As the Lord lives," and that is as strong a statement as anyone can make. If you know that God is, then you know that I am determined in my course of action. And as your soul lives, if you know that you are alive, you know that this is what I am determined to do and will not budge or change from my purpose. And it's a good thing she was, because laying the staff on the child's face did not revive him. Verses 32 through 35. When Elisha came into the house, there was the child lying dead on his bed. He went in, therefore, that shut the door behind the two of them and prayed to the Lord. And he went up and lay on the child and put his mouth on his mouth, his eyes on his eyes, and his hands on his hands, and he stretched himself out on the child, and the flesh of the child became warm. However, there was no life yet in the child. So he returned and walked back and forth in the house. That would be downstairs. And again went up and stretched himself out on him, and then the child sneezed 7 times, and the child opened his eyes. Well, that is an unusual procedure, no doubt, in our society. But I don't know how Elisha knew to do that, whether God gave him an instruction or what. But that is what he did. So first of all, he goes in alone. They are outside. And after praying, he stretches himself on the child, but only his flesh becomes warm. Well, that's a good sign. That's a good indication. But there's no life yet manifesting itself. So he returned downstairs and paced a bit, and then went back up and stretched out on the child again. And this time he got the results that he had been praying for. This time the child's life went back into him. Now perhaps the Shunammite woman was downstairs in the house praying, or maybe she had never moved. She and Gehazi were upstairs. Elisha may have come out, gone downstairs, come back up, and they may have still been standing there. But it certainly did not look good when Elisha left and did not have any good news to offer her. But the second time, he does have good news. Let's notice verse 36. And he called Gehazi and said, "Call this Shunammite woman." So he called her, and when she came into him, he said, "Pick up your son." Now these had to be some of the best words she had ever heard in her life. But I want to notice something here about Elisha, even though he's not the subject. Elisha always elects to use his servant whenever he can. He could have walked to the door or gone downstairs and told her the good news, but he sent his servant. One particular action characterizes Elisha. He delegates. He never does, as a prophet of the Lord, what somebody else can do with him. You may remember what happened in the next chapter. When Naaman the Syrian came down, Elisha sent Gehazi out to talk to him. And that's one of the reasons he was so upset, why Naaman was so upset. He said, "I thought he'd at least come out and talk to me." No, he sent his servant. Elisha seems to love to delegate authority to other people to accomplish what he could do himself, but he chooses to use others doing it. Now we come to the last verse in verse 37. So she went in and fell at his feet and bowed to the ground. Then she picked up her son and went out. A very short conclusion to all that has happened in this text. But we find two more characteristics concerning the woman. And that is, first of all, she had remained faithful all this time. She had remained confident all this time. She knew that he had the power of God, and she never wavered in that confidence. She maintained it all the way through, despite what it looked like, despite what she could observe. She knew that Elisha had God's power and could restore his life to him. So she remained faithful and confident all this time. There's one other thing, though. She is thankful. She expresses her thanks first. Did you notice that? She expressed her thanks even before receiving her beloved son back, and that has been the foremost thing on her mind. She would not even stop and talk to anybody. She was so determined to get this done. And now that it's been accomplished, you would think maybe the first thing she would do is run in and say, "My son, my son." but she gave thanks. She bowed down and gave thanks because that was the most important thing. We should always give thanks to God for the good things that we receive before enjoying them. And that's what she did. And then she picked up her son. Truly, these characteristics are ones that all women and men should desire to have. So let's mention those one more time. First, thoughtful. Second, kind. Third, hospitable. Fourth, prepared. She never knew when Elisha would be through, but she was prepared whenever he came. Fifth, unselfish. She had no idea that she would be rewarded in return. Sixth, a person of spiritual discernment, knowing that he was a prophet of God. Seventh, a self-starter. She took the initiative. Eighth, being decisive. This is the first one we looked at tonight. Then second or ninth, tactical. She was strategic. She knew what she wanted to accomplish and she would not be deterred from that strategy. Third or tenth, tenacity, determination. Nothing was going to dissuade her from what she had determined to do. And then the last two, 11 and 12, or 4 and 5, faithful through all of this problem. And thankful, an even dozen of characteristics. Truly, she is a notable woman, though we don't even know her name. But she ranks with Ruth. She ranks with Esther and others. And if we have these qualities, we'll be notable too, because these qualities make for a very well-rounded Christian. This evening, if you have never obeyed the gospel, we encourage you to do so. And if you know, as we talked more in detail about this morning, about faith in God and about repenting of sins and changing the way that you live, confessing that he is the Christ, the Son of God, and being buried with him in baptism, if you're ready to do that, then you're ready to be blessed with salvation. But you need to then continue in God's way and be faithful unto death. If you're already a child of God, maybe you've been thinking about ways to improve yourself. Well, certainly, considering what we've noticed with this woman, you have a lot of things you can work on right there. And we encourage all of us to do exactly that. If we can help you spiritually this evening, let us know while we stand and while we sing.